Good afternoon. I'd like to call the June 16th, 2020 remote hearing of Education Policy Committee to order. I'd first like to go over a few minutes to take a few minutes to review some of the procedures for the public members. As a reminder, we're conducting this pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for remote committee hearings. A few additional reminders. A reminder to those on the line to keep themselves muted in order to preserve sound quality. We're going to be recognized by the chair, use the raise hands feature in Zoom, or if you're dialing in, you can press star 9. There was a committee packet received this morning with all the handouts like you would have during committee hearing, as well as the bills, and it's posted publicly on the Education Policy Committee website. And then if members of the public wish to submit a written comment or question, please email edpolicy@house.mn. That's edpolicy@house.mn. And if we get a chance, if we have enough time, I may read a few of those questions that were sent in. So we will now pause to unmute all the microphones to take the roll call. CLA will now unmute the unmute the microphone. And by the way, everybody, Eric Peterson, I would like to welcome him to the Education Policy Committee. He is our new CLA. And hopefully next session you'll get a chance to meet him in person, if not before. So Mr. Peterson, will you please take the roll?
Perfect. Thanks, Chair Joachim. Chair Joachim?
Present.
Vice Chair Kunesh-Podein?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Present.
Representative Barr? Representative Barr? Representative Baker? Representative Baker?
And 150,000 workplaces. And COVID-19 has had and will have a significant on.
Representative Baker?
On the
yes.
If you were a worker for a business.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Bierman?
Present.
Representative Christensen? Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Grunhagen?
Present.
Representative Hassan? Representative Hassan? Representative Herr?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Mariani? Representative Mariani? Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Sandel? Representative Sandel? Representative Scott, excused. Representative Erdahl?
Present.
And Representative Wazlowick?
Present.
Representative Barr? Representative Hassan? Representative Mariani? Representative Sandel? All right, there's a quorum present, Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. So first on the agenda today is House File 36. House File 36 contains bills that we have heard before in committee. They were on our way to putting this into a bigger policy bill before COVID hit. So we're bringing this back. Representative Kunesh-Podein has this bill, House File 36. Because we've heard almost every single one of these provisions, if not once, but twice, if not three times in committee, we're going to take limited testimony today. Our testimony will be focused on two specific provisions. One is a social-emotional learning piece. We heard that in the education policy bill, the governor, that we laid on the table, and we had that as an individual bill that we were going to hear on March 13th before we had to cancel the meeting. And then also the pieces on non-exclusionary discipline, which we did have a hearing on by itself in committee for an informational hearing. So we've had a lot of public testimony on that piece, but I wanted to have a tiny bit more too. So as we move forward, Representative Kunesh-Podein, would you like to move your bill before the committee in to have it head over to general registry after this?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that House File 36 be recommended for placement on the General Register.
Thank you, Representative Knush-Babin. So Representative Knush-Babin, I understand that you have an A1 amendment. Would you like to move that amendment?
Yes, please, Madam Chair. I move the A1 amendment. This amendment adds in a section that's related to teachers' cultural responsiveness evaluation, and that was inadvertently omitted from the bill draft. The addition of this section ensures that this requirement also applies to the teachers in cities of the first class.
Thank you, Representative Knush-Babin. I want to go to members' questions real quick on the A1 amendment. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question isn't on the amendment because that's a great addition. It needs to be included. My question is on the referral. Noticing that the social and emotional had a fiscal note, and it says in there that federal funds would pay for that. I'm not sure we know that for sure. So I'm wondering why you're not referring it to finance.
Thank you for the question, Representative Erickson. Actually, there has been an amended fiscal note, and there is no cost to it, but we can send it to General Registry, and I can talk again to Chair Dabney, but he said he doesn't need to hear it because of the amended fiscal note. Does anybody have any further questions? Seeing none, let's move on to the A1 amendment. Mr. Peterson, will you unmute the microphones? We'll take a voice vote on this. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Aye. All those opposed, no. The A1 amendment has been adopted. Representative Knush-Babin, would you like to go ahead and walk through your bill?
Great. Thank you so much for that, Chair Joachim. So, legislators, we have been given a gift today, kind of a do-over. It's not often that we have an opportunity to return to the legislature to clear up some of our uncompleted work and clear up our report card. So we've returned today to complete that incomplete with some meaningful legislation so that when our students get that green light to return to school and when educators and administrators reorganize what they need to do along the line of educating Minnesota kids, they have bolstered supports and equitable access to resources that we can provide in the best way that we can. So this compilation of bipartisan efforts is truly student-centered, and it's putting the spotlight on real-time outcomes. And with that, I would like to ask nonpartisan staff, Ben Weeks, to perhaps walk through the bill.
Mr. Weeks.
Madam Chair and members, again, this is Ben Weeks, and I work in the House Research Department, and I'll just do a high-level overview of House File 36 in the 2021 special session. For purposes of the overview, I've grouped the provisions of the bill into seven loose and somewhat arbitrary categories that I'll go through in no particular order. First, there are a number of provisions related to student discipline, specifically regarding discipline involving removal of students from class or removal of students from school. Two, there are provisions adding requirements that teachers and principals are evaluated on cultural competency. Three, provisions regarding American Indian students as well as American Indian community members and their relationship to education in Minnesota. Four, there are provisions related to ethnic studies and inclusive practices in schools. Five, provisions related to social emotional learning as well as safe and supportive schools. Six, a provision related to increasing the number of teachers of color as well as American Indian teachers in Minnesota schools. And finally, prohibitions related to strengthening the prohibitions against lunch shaming in Minnesota. And as Chair Joachim mentioned a little while ago, by my reckoning, all of these provisions, the individual sections, have been heard one or more times in this committee, as well as many of them getting hearings in other committees as well. And the vast majority of these were also governor's recommendations included in Chair Joachim's House File 3186 from the regular session. So unless anyone has any more particular specific questions, That's all I have for the overview.
Representative Kunesh-Kiti, and I know you have, there's a few testifiers. Would you mind if we take a few quick specific questions for nonpartisan staff first?
Sure, that would be fine.
Members, just use the raise hands feature if you have quick questions for Mr. Weeks on the substance of what's in the bill before we move to testifiers. Seeing none, we'll also have time for questions after testifiers. So I think I'm going to go first to Commissioner Mary Catherine Rickert, who's joined us today. Commissioner.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you very much for this opportunity to testify this afternoon. My name is Mary Catherine Ricker, and I am Commissioner at the Department of Education. I appreciate this opportunity during special session to provide my thoughts on House File 36. I want to thank you, Madam Chair, for considering these proposals, and I want to thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein, for offering this important bill. On February 26th, I presented the full version of Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's policy bill alongside MDE leaders. These proposals that we presented then are even more important now because this COVID pandemic has exposed greater disparities, and the murder of George Floyd has demonstrated why these building blocks are necessary to continue to build a more responsive public school system for our students and our communities. The outbreak of COVID-19 and the subsequent distance learning shined a brighter light on the disparities that exist in our education system for students of color, for our Indigenous students, for our English language learners, for our students with disabilities, our students experiencing homelessness or high mobility, and our students living in poverty. From access to the internet and technology, to the need for culturally appropriate supports, and to the lack of mental health supports. Then, the senseless and disturbing murder of George Floyd demonstrated once again how much our educational structures must be rebuilt to fully serve and support communities of color and American Indian communities. Mr. Floyd's killing is a symptom of a disease that has plagued our state for generations. And it is incumbent upon all of us to do better for Minnesotans. One bill cannot and will not fix years of racism and socioeconomic inequalities experienced by historically marginalized communities. However, the proposals in House File 36 are the building blocks we need to help mitigate those disparities by moving us closer to reaching our collective goal for every child to have a world-class education in a safe and welcoming environment and with caring and qualified educators. House File 36 contains numerous proposals from the governor and lieutenant governor that support students from historically marginalized groups and diverse backgrounds and strengthen our schools. The policies in this bill emphasize inclusive and respectful teaching, learning, and working environments for all students, families, and school staff by updating statutes around the world's best workforce, achievement and integration, and teacher and principal development and evaluation. Our communities continue to tell us that our schools are not inclusive and culturally responsive spaces for all students, staff, and families. This lack of inclusivity and responsiveness is a contributor to Minnesota's opportunity gap. Expanding the diversity of our teacher workforce is a top priority for the governor, lieutenant governor, and for me. Data shows that students perform better when they have teachers who look like them, and that all students benefit when they learn from a diverse group of teachers, reflective of our students and our communities. The goal of increasing the number of teachers of color and American Indian teachers by at least 2 percentage points per year, with an overarching goal of having teacher diversity match the overall diversity of Minnesota by the year 2040, holds us accountable
to make learning more inclusive and set students up for success now and throughout their lives. The bill also contains several proposals brought forth by the Tribal Nations Education Committee, aimed at improving the educational experiences of American Indian students, families, and communities in partnership with our tribal nations. These provisions range from enhancing the role of American Indian Parent Advisory Committees to increasing the Tribal Nations Education Committee's capacity to work with districts and charter schools to help American Indian students, to affirming the right of our American Indian graduates to wear tribal regalia at their graduation ceremonies. I join Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan in their call to continue our commitment to collaborate with and consult our tribal nations on a more meaningful and more regular basis. Strengthening our work for American Indian students must be a priority if we are to be successful at closing gaps and expanding opportunities. To create more inclusive, supportive, and equitable schools, we must do everything possible to create safe and welcoming school environments for our students, which includes making fundamental changes to our student discipline system. Certain practices like pupil withdrawals have hidden inequities in our education system, while the lack of robust non-exclusionary policies has greatly contributed to the school-to-prison pipeline. The Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition has been instrumental in championing next-generation restorative practices, de-escalation, and inclusionary policies, and we very much appreciate their work. Non-exclusionary discipline policies, tracking pupil withdrawal agreements, and banning the dismissal of 3- and 4-year-old pre-kindergarten students are some of the first steps we can take to make change in this area. Finally, we can take one thing off the plates of our students' worries by ensuring they get healthy and nutritious meals in a respectful manner. The proposals in this bill represent purposeful and passionate advocacy from and collaboration by many community members, representative groups, and legislators. I want to be absolutely clear that the work of our school food service staff has been crucial to student well-being and achievement. It has become even more important during distance learning to ensure that all students in need are still receiving meals. However, in some rare circumstances, we have seen practices that punish children for adult problems, and we can all agree that this is simply unacceptable. Every child deserves to be fed and treated with respect, which is why we must provide clear and consistent guidelines to our schools for equitable, kind, and caring ways of providing meals to all of our students that recognize the financial stresses that unpaid meal debt creates for food service budgets. Ensuring respect in the lunchroom has bipartisan support, and so I do encourage the legislature to make it law. Thank you to the chair and to the committee for hearing the governor's policy proposals contained in this bill. Passing this bill will provide meaningful building blocks towards supporting Minnesota's historically marginalized students and their communities, and will strengthen our public school system. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Ricker. Next up, we have Dr. Michael Rodriguez, the Associate Dean for the College of Education and Human Development at the University of Minnesota. I want to thank him for being able to testify at short notice. Like I said, on March 13th, we had him lined up to hear the social-emotional learning bill that I was carrying, but of course, COVID changed things. So, Dr. Rodriguez, welcome to the committee and proceed.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you, members of the committee. Happy to be here again with you, spend a little bit of time. You have heard me in the past talk briefly about social and emotional learning. I'm going to refer to that as SEL. And I just wanted to emphasize a couple things and then bring some evidence and data that we have about our own Minnesota students to this conversation. We absolutely acknowledge learning is a social activity, and cognitive development, academic development, and identity development co-occur. They are intertwined, And we cannot be successful with academic development, the cognitive side, if we ignore SEL. The evidence regarding the importance of SEL is substantial, and there is consensus among National Research Council, National Academy of Medicine, and even our own Minnesota Department of Education, who has produced and provided guidance for Minnesota schools around this. In Minnesota, our students go to school with very high levels of commitment to learning, positive identity and outlook, social competence and empowerment. However, we have seen that the levels of each of these developmental skills has fallen since 2016. And that's been consistent across racial and ethnic groups and across the state. We do see much lower levels of SEL among students who have experienced trauma, those who have been disciplined in school or skip school, those who identify as LGB, and our students who have been homeless or in foster care. And quite the opposite, students who are at SEL levels where they're prepared to succeed in learning, it's a level that we call to be equipped for learning, these students have a full grade point average higher in their GPA. They're twice as likely to have college goals. They are one third likely to experience significant mental distress, and they're far less likely to use drugs or alcohol or skip school, far more likely to thrive and avoid risky behaviors. And quite surprising to me, actually, these differences are consistent across student groups, including American Indian, Asian, Black, White, Latino, Somali, and Hmong students. We are remarkably consistent in these findings in Minnesota for all students. We also know that students succeed best in relationship-rich environments, including preschool through high school and higher education settings. The commissioner has spoken to this in the past. For effective educational and youth development interventions and programs, they have at their core relationships. It is the active ingredient. It is the roots of a tree that nourish the tree, keep it stable during storms, and allow it to thrive. This is the function of relationships. COVID-19 has interrupted many important relationships in the lives of our students, relationships that they had with their peers, teachers, coaches, and counselors, bus drivers, and many others in schools. We now need to reestablish those relationships if we are going to be successful moving forward. So what can we do? We can be more mindful and intentional about developing relationships, not because we think it's a good idea and we should have relationships with our students and parents and families and communities, but because the evidence is clear that relationships are a core component of effective teaching and learning. Effective relationships are developmental. They help students grow with encouragement to reach high goals and the provision of the needed supports. This is where the bill comes in. We can connect teaching and learning to the learning context students face through the development of social and emotional competencies. Because these competencies are also culturally bound, it requires we get to know our students, our families, our communities. This will allow teachers and school staff to connect learning goals, the disciplinary knowledge and practices of which they are experts, and connect those to student context, making learning relevant and powerful, giving students reasons for learning. These considerations are particularly important for students of color and Indigenous students, and for students facing persistent learning challenges, including students in general education and special education. Because we are not tuned in to the social and emotional competencies and learning contexts of some of our students, we identify too many students for special ed services or for behavioral interventions. When we don't acknowledge the fact that academic, social, and emotional development are fundamentally interconnected, we're not able to meet the learning needs of our students. I'm happy to support all efforts that make SEL more intentional, which is consistent with the MDE guidance that was developed. And that guidance was developed through a community K-12 and higher education collaborative process. This collaborative effort promotes SEL practices and assessments in schools that are school-wide, intentional, integrated in current practice, and used to help us learn how to do schooling better meet the needs of students that have not been adequately supported, and move us toward more equitable practices and policies. So thank you. Happy here to endorse this effort.
Thank you so much, Dr. Rodriguez. We just have three more testifiers, then we'll go to member questions. Samantha Diaz, the Policy and Legislative Director for the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me just make sure. Can you hear me? I was having some tech issues earlier. Okay, great. Chair Youakim and members of the House Education Policy Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Samantha Diaz, and I'm the Legislative and Policy Director in the area of education at the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. The tragic events that have taken place over the past several weeks, on top of the surge of the COVID-19 across the state, have once again highlighted the racial disparities resulting in the marginalization and disenfranchisement of Black and Brown communities. It is in this context that today we express strong and urgent support for HF 36, led by Representative Kunesh Poudin, as these critical policy proposals are bold steps in the right directions to legitimately address the state's persistent and achievement and opportunity gaps. So in addition to the provisions included in the 2020 Increased Teachers of Color Act that have served as a top priority for our agency and our community, we wanted to quickly highlight the importance to our community of the social-emotional learning provisions in Section 6 in this bill. MCLA conducted an online survey last month, actually at the recommendation of Commissioner Ricker, in order for us to continue to enhance our understanding of our families' experience with distance learning. So first, the data and the sentiment clearly demonstrated that our community is reeling economically and emotionally as a result of the pandemic. And furthermore, parents noted that social emotional well-being of students is of concern, and current limited access to mental health services makes it imperative to emphasize social and emotional learning as we move forward. When asked to measure their child's emotional well-being, approximately 30% of respondents considered their child to be poor or sad or very poor during that distance learning period. And less than half indicated that their child always has access to the behavioral or mental health services that they might need, while 30% actually indicated that their child never has access to those services. So quickly to conclude, as a result of our collected data and continued conversations with diverse stakeholders in our community, we firmly believe that the time to act on this is now. Students of color cannot wait any longer for historical and systemic barriers to be addressed in order for them to receive a high quality and equitable education. Thank you for your leadership and during this unprecedented and historic period in our state and in our nation.
Thank you, Ms. Diaz. Next up, we have Rukia Abdi. She's a parent educator in Minneapolis, and I'm sorry if I pronounced your name wrong. Go ahead, introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you so much, Anna. Greetings of peace, everyone, and Madam Chair and committee members. I am so happy to be here and share my thoughts around this important thing. And my name is Rukia Abdi, and I'm a parent educator, author, and a family advocate. What I would like to start is my second year here in the United States in 2001. I worked as a bilingual education assistant at Minneapolis Public Schools. It has been a long time. Right now, I work currently for Hennepin County Library, and that means from that time until right now, I'm dealing with families and children. I also provide cultural competence trainings to educators and parenting workshop to parents, especially Somali parents. Studying child development and minoring early childhood, I learned the early years is very crucial, and we can all agree about this. And I'm so really glad, and I'm so lucky to hear that whatever was in my mind, like someone is saying like the same thing kind of, and quality early care and education determines whether the child will graduate high school and lead a successful life later on. One of the studies that has been done is called the Abecedarian Project that took place in 1972. And the reason I'm referring that is most of the time when there is a gap in education, we refer like low income, like area where the child lives. And that that was the case, but the children and were very successful later on. Our job as educators or adults is to nurture the neurons that these children have in their brain, especially the early years. And those neurons don't know reality, who is the person who's nurturing. Providing quality care is what our children need. Suspension isolates our children. As we touch right now, suspension is also detrimental to the social emotional well-being of the child. Suspension is also, it also makes the child guilty from the get-go. And this takes in the form of a school to prison pipeline later on. That means there is an internalized oppression or feelings of guilty that this child will have when they grow up. During my long time of working with families, I learned that our families have several barriers in school. Our school system needs improvement. One of it is the policies that is not responsive to our cultural needs or the cultural needs of the families. We want families to be engaged in school. We know it's a very beautiful thing, but sometimes we never ask why parents are not engaged and why they're not coming. If we kick out our babies from the classroom, we never think the parent is at work. And the parent, they have choices. For example, one is leave that job and come pick up the child. The other is tell another person to pick up that child. Over here, we're playing like the blame game as adults. The school is bad, we can say. The parents are not responsible, we can say. But imagine the trauma that goes into this child's brain. This child is innocent, is growing up, and is entrusted into us. And then we try to kick out and then say something happened. Who is responsible teaching and guiding our children? Where are all those classroom strategies that say planning moments? And when will the child learn if they don't make a mistake? Our children are not going to school to learn math and reading only, but also they're learning to be a responsible citizen, how to solve problems. And in order to solve a problem, we need to have a problem and see adult who's role modeling. I would like to take the opportunity and share with you that I have done so many cultural trainings. And what I realized and saw is both our parents and educators have cultural gap, cultural education gap. There is a fear that some of the teachers don't want to ask certain stuff to parents. Who is going to bridge this gap? The Abecedarian Project that I mentioned earlier gives us a perfect snapshot about the bigger work that we have to do as educators, adults, and policymakers. We need to work together, and we need our parents and educators to give them opportunity and the tools they need to function. Some of those tools are learn each other, not freak out from each other. And also what we need to make sure is every educational policy that is in place leads to a successful and graduation of our children. That was the motive and goal of this project. That's why no one was asking what is the policy of this office, but the parents and educators were cooperating and trying just to deliver high quality education from early and then go follow these children, whether they were successful or not. And then, as we know, they were very successful because adults were very nurturing, no matter what they were doing or where they lived. We had endless meetings finding out to close the opportunity gap. Pandemic and distance learning helped us quickly figure out what we had and the policies that were in place that were not working. Things are different right now. We are in different time. Before we had time, we were talking. Right now, there is no time. Our education need is clean up. And we educators, parents, and advocates, and activists, we are here to help you and show you the stained spots of our education system. We are waiting you, looking your leadership. As a mother, family advocate, educator, I urge you to ban the suspension of our babies pre-K, K, first, second, and instead think these are our future leaders and we need to nurture them, and the time is right now. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Ms. Abdi. Last up, I have Maureen Halden, staff attorney for Minnesota Legal Services Advocacy Project and Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition. First, I'd like to announce that thank you, Representative Sandel, for joining us. And we're going to try to get back on track here. We're running a little bit behind. So, Ms. Halden, you can play cleanup for the testifiers.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Chair Joachim. Chair Joachim and members, my name is Maureen Halden. I'm an attorney with Legal Aid, which includes the Minnesota Disability Law Center, where I've represented children with disabilities on school-related issues. And as Chair Joachim said, Legal Aid is part of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition, which works to promote alternatives to suspensions and to end racial disparities. I am grateful for the chance to testify today in support of the non-exclusionary discipline pieces in House File 36. These provisions are really important, particularly at this time. You all have heard the statistics about racial disparities in discipline in Minnesota. You have heard that this is not a reflection of different student behaviors. And that, in fact, I think as Ms. Abdi was referencing, most challenging behaviors are an expression that the child has a need that they lack the skills to appropriately express. But unfortunately, many of our school policies are based on the premise that challenging behaviors are choices by children. And research shows that adults are more likely to watch for and expect misbehaviors from Black children over white children. So as Commissioner Rickard said, we need fundamental changes to the way our schools approach discipline. We also know that suspensions and exclusionary discipline directly contributed to academic disparities, and studies have found that when racial disparities increase in discipline, so do they in academic outcomes. And finally, I think as Ms. Abdi so eloquently said, discipline can have such a detrimental long-term impact on families and kids' relationships with schools and the trust that they have. So how does House File 36 help? I think first it sets the standard that this first set of tools schools should look to address challenging behaviors are non-exclusionary approaches. So positive behavior interventions, social emotional learning, as you've heard about, which can actually teach the skills to more appropriately express unmet needs. I think about one client I had who was a young Black boy on the autism spectrum who was removed from school for a long time after a major outburst. He was struggling with the death of his grandmother, and he was so heartbroken, but he didn't have the tools to express or process his grief. I think about how social emotional learning support for him probably likely could have even prevented the challenging behavior in the first place. Lots of schools are doing this now. This provision makes our written laws reflect what we know are the best practices. House File 36 also requires that information about how to best support a student be passed along to other districts if the student's records are transferred. House File 36 includes provisions to help mitigate lost instructional time when suspensions do occur by making alternative education services more available. It also strengthens the readmission process, which I think will make it more likely that this process helps students and families work with schools and build that trust to help address students' underlying needs. It also makes clearer and easier to track data around things that we aren't necessarily tracking right now, like people withdrawal agreements and in-school suspensions. And last but not least, Solutions Not Suspension and Legal Aid are so supportive of the limits on the use of dismissals for our youngest learners, as Ms. Abney spoke to. This is such a huge and necessary change, and we're really grateful for the partnership of the Minnesota Community Educators Association and other school groups in reaching agreement on this. These reforms will go a really long way, I think, to address the overuse of exclusionary discipline in our schools and the disproportionate impact that they have. These are reforms that students and families have been fighting for a long time, and we're really excited to see this momentum. So thank you so much, Chair Youakim and Representative Kanesh Padin and Commissioner Rickert for your leadership. And thank you to the whole committee for your leadership during these uncertain times. I hope you'll support these provisions.
Thank you, Ms. Haldon. So next we have members that are starting to put their names on the list for questions. Remember to use the raise your hand feature if you have one. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question, first I'll make a comment. These testifiers made some excellent points today, so thank you very much. And especially to Ms. Abdi, as a parent educator and speaking as a parent, I so appreciate your comments because I realize as a grandma that this distance learning has been very hard on developing relationships. And with that said, Dr. Rodriguez too has made some really good points. But my question is for Commissioner Ricker. You know, Commissioner Ricker, I worked with Commissioner Caselius, former Commissioner Caselius, on the ESSA plan. And your remarks at the beginning of your presentation reminded me that we included so much in Minnesota's ESSA plan about cultural competency. So I wish you would review for the committee all the areas that are covered in our ESSA plan that's been in place now for a couple of years, and mm-hmm. whether or not you're following up to make sure that that accountability is in place. Because that's the mm-hmm. reason we designed the ESSA plan, was for accountability and for school improvement. And because there's so many references, I mean, I count six specifically mm-hmm. throughout the ESSA plan that we embedded that deal with, whether it's the teacher or it's different types of students, you know, our language learners mm-hmm. or our migrants. We really were very specific in including cultural competency. So, you know, would you just bring us up to date on whether or not there's accountability and where have we failed? Mm-hmm. If the ESSA plan is being honored, where have we failed?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Ricker.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, thank you so much for bringing that up and for your question, because this is not a question of failure. It is a question of next step. And you're absolutely right. There was a lot of co-convening. There was a lot of collaboration in building out our ESSA plan. And in fact, we were building out at the Minnesota Department of Education, we were building out our own community-based reflection on where we are, where we've been, how we are doing, and determining how we were going to make sure that we went back around to re-engage a lot of those same community members who helped us build the ESSA plan in the first place. And we are still looking forward to that deep engagement on ESSA. What some of the near-term work gave us the opportunity to do in both before the pandemic in beginning this legislative session was to create these building blocks, not because of a failure of anyone or a failure of collaboration, but as a next opportunity for where we continue to make sure that cultural relevancy is just what we do, that it is not an add-on to anything, but that it is infused and it is one of the ways we center our work. It's one of the ways we filter our work. And so I see these actually as complements to each other. I don't see the proposals today as competing with the incredible collaboration and all of the groundwork and all the groundbreaking work actually that was done with ESSA. And then I do see the opportunity now to again re-enter this conversation. And again, just how grateful I am to you and members of this committee for taking another look at these proposals, which are just real building blocks toward some of the greater goals we all have for our students and our school communities. And then the last thing I would just say is that while we made the big shift at the Department of Education to also focus on distance learning and focus on now our summer learning opportunities and building out into every opportunity that is still on the table for this fall, that re-engagement with all of the community members who helped develop ESSA is actually still very much one of our goals.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson, follow up.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Commissioner Ricker. You know, specifically, and I'm looking at what we wrote in the World's Best Workforce or in relation to our submittal on the World's Best Workforce. And we specifically said that our teacher workforce for every Minnesota district must have, must have teachers that students learn from who have had the experiences in both daily life and their culture to share with their students. And, you know, honestly, I don't think we'd be having some of these problems if we really were taking seriously our ESSA plan, because it is so replete in and so inclusive in what it is we worked so hard to develop and to get approval on, whether it's in Title I, Part A, or Title I, Part C, or I'm looking at Title II, Part A, for English language learners. And, you know, here's a quote from the MDE staff partners who said that we have to have online modules that lift up the linguistic and cultural strengths of students. Does that exist? You know, I don't even know. And so, Madam Chair, I'll close off my comments here by asking the commissioner to please provide us with the link to the competencies for social and emotional learning, because I've not found them on the website, and maybe it's because I just haven't been able to find them. But I think we all on this committee should have that link of those competencies, because that is an important part, especially if we're considering character education and citizenship. Because as we heard Representative Erdahl and Representative Kunesh-Bedin say earlier, that, you know, civic engagement, civic understanding, citizenship, that's all really important to how we deal with cultural issues if and when we have them. And character education always is a stronghold for building up our students, because one of the most important attributes is respect. And if we are focusing on those in our social and emotional learning, you know, I'm really going to be so happy that we're going to have this opportunity to enhance the education of our children, not only academically, but in their relationship building and in their school life and in their future. So I look forward to receiving that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Ricker, if you have a quick follow-up, and then I have a few other representatives.
Yes, Madam Chair, I wrote down, I will work on getting that link and putting it in the chat, but we can also follow up with sending it to all of your emails as well for the social emotional learning work that we've done and we have at the department.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Hey, I, you know, I've been hearing about this achievement gap for the whole 10 years I've been up here at the state legislature, and also 16 years on the school board. So it's been around a while, right? And it doesn't seem to be getting any better, no matter how much money we spend and how many reforms we promote. You know, I won't list all the reforms that I've watched go through that have, in many cases, wasted billions of dollars, federal and state, without actually raising academic scores, especially for our least privileged minority students. you know, my concern is there's they should try this reform at school choice. Introduce ethical and principled competition with a cut score. Why don't we try that reform? That would actually, in my opinion, from the research I've done, actually accomplish something. Instead, we come with one reform after the next, spending literally billions of dollars, and then in a few years, we redo it all again. Let the money follow the student, okay? That's what needs to happen, and that's what's not in here. And I can't tell you how many times over the 26 years or 16 years I've been on the school board and 10 at the legislature, you hear the word research-based and best practices when it comes to educational reform. And 9 times out of 10, the word research-based and best practices equal the worst results for our students. Have mercy on those minority students that are trapped in failing schools. Give them a chance to choose a different avenue for their academic excellence, which is what we all want for them. I'm not doubting anybody wants that. So I could go on, but the point is I just can't support this bill. And I know people are well-intended. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. We do have school choice in Minnesota. People can open enroll wherever they'd like, but I'm sure that is a topic for another day. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had to unmute. I wanted to just make a quick comment that I was really glad to see this provision in the bill. And I wanted to just reiterate, I hear what my colleagues are saying. And you know what? This achievement gap has persisted for a really long time. And we continue to put layer after layer of, if we do X, Y, and Z, if we improve the, you know, the social studies classes, or we improve, like, I think all of those things are extremely valid. But I guess I was a little bit disappointed to hear that an issue that is as big as the achievement gap that we talk about trying and have not closed it as a failure. And I always often think about, like, the fact that we've spent hundreds of years in this country building this system. And the system was built to produce the exact results that we get right now, where we undereducate or not educate our Black and Brown students. And then our white students do very well. And that I don't know how anybody thinks that somehow we were going to find a solution that will fix this. That somehow that we're just going to have on the first try be able to close the achievement gap. And I often liken this to the fact that if it took us this many years to create a system that creates these disparities, it's probably going to take us an equal amount of times and trying until we undo it. And that just opening up schools in ways that we think will create competition, which doesn't, isn't going to solve the problem. Asking our commissioner and our departments to if you just implement these things in a certain way, it would fix the problem. And it doesn't, because the things that we are experiencing are structural. We are experiencing structural racism. We are experiencing systemic racism. We are experiencing all of these things and which cause the issues within our school district that leads to higher suspension rates of our Black and Brown students. That nationally, Black students are suspended 3 times as often as their white peers. And in Minnesota, it's 8 times as often. And that we have many, many examples now that the issues around school discipline has to do with that we don't discipline our kids the same. That I shared this example before, I think, that where there was a federal investigator who found out that a Black second grade student who was suspended for 1 day for poking another student with a pencil, while a white second grade student who threw a rock that hit another student and broke a teacher's sunglasses was not. That white student was allowed to work off the cost of sunglasses by helping the teacher at lunch for several days. I don't know what kinds of things of seeing a teacher who looks like a child or who has a child's life experience or however is the case, is going to fix the fact that this is a problem and that it doesn't change the teachers' behaviors. It doesn't change the structures that set in place that tell us that one child is valued more than another, that when we suspend in a way that is unfair. And I'm so glad to see this bill and to see that it doesn't undermine teachers and the profession, but it really gives them the tools and they need to address. And so I am really supportive of this bill. I'm really glad to see this here. And I think that even with these provisions in place, like, we don't take away local control or our local approaches, and that we are clear. What we're doing is clarifying and providing language that clears up expectations and identifies, like, what is an in-school suspension? Because different people are interpreting different words, you know, in different ways. And so I just wanted to just reiterate my support for this bill and why it is so important, and that in all of the times that we have failed, each time we do have learnings. And that is equally important, because we will never find a solution if we don't try first. So I just want to leave my comments at that and just want to talk about how much I appreciate that this provision is back in here.
Thank you so much, Representative Herr. Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, once again, Representative Gruenhagen spurs thoughts in my mind that are beyond what I was going to talk about. And in this case, Madam Chair, you brought it up too, that the impact of our open enrollment system in the state. And I would, not for today, but at a future time, I think we should maybe go into more depth the impacts of open enrollment in terms of minority students, how much are they using it? Maybe if there's a way to compare with other students. Are minority students using open enrollment to go from Minneapolis or St. Paul schools to suburban schools? I think it'd be very interesting to look at that at some point. But the more specific question that I have, and maybe Commissioner Ricker could answer, maybe Ms. Holland, I don't know. And I hope that this wasn't brought up, but I've been a little bit distracted as I sit with this committee with calls from another committee that I'm on. And now I just got a call about the other committee. Greg Davis will have to wait. But Commissioner Ricker, I guess, do we have data on how many 3 or 4 year olds are suspended or removed from preschool?
I don't know if Commissioner Ricker would be the right person to answer that, or Ms. Holden, either one who may have the answer.
Chair Joachim, I can speak to it if you'd like. Commissioner Ricker may know more, though.
I know. I was just going to say we also have expert staff from the Department of Education. I believe Mary Kay LaCroix is on as well. Who has been a real leader here.
Commissioner Ricker, you keep fading out on us a little bit when you speak. That's okay.
Okay. We also have expert staff. Is that better? Okay. I'm so sorry, everyone. We also have expert staff from the Department of Education, Mary Kay Litzau, who was on before, who may have more up to date. I'm looking at.
Well, let's say this. I
do see Mary Kay here.
I will let either Mary Kay or Ms. Holden quickly, maybe quickly answer that, and then you can send us via email more of the stats so that we can move on. So, Ms. Litzau.
Absolutely.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I think that would be the best way to do it, is to provide the information to you. I have been part of a meeting with Department of Human Services and many people from different organizations that talked about how many students are being suspended from programs, both private childcare and from the school programs. And they tend to be students of color. And nationally, we have a lot of data on that. We have less data in Minnesota, but we have a lot of anecdotal data regarding that. And with that, I'll pass it on to Mara and Holden.
Thank you, Ms. Litzau. And Ms. Holden, if you can briefly add to that, otherwise I'm going to go to Representative Bennett, and we're going to move to final comments.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. I would just reiterate what Ms. Lutzow just said, which is that we don't really have a system for tracking that data here. One of the benefits of the language in House File 33 and 36 is that it would, in order for the exclusion or the expulsion exception to be used, it would mean that that data would become available because the hearing process would have to be used and MDE would likely have access to that data.
And I'd like to add, I talked to Ms. Valerie Dozen this morning, and she wanted to reiterate that this was this language that you see in here was the organizations coming together and crafting some really good policy that they could all agree on, and that they agree that would work too. So she wanted to make sure I said that it was beyond just like a compromise, that they thought this was good policy, all the sides did. So we'll look for that information, and we'll move on to Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just like to make a comment about the bill in general, and then I do have a specific question about one of the provisions here. But first, just I'd like to say, well, thank you for including Representative Juergens' lunch shaming provision in here. I think that's really important that is not happening in our schools, and we want to make sure, so appreciate that being included. Just generally, I'd like to make a comment kind of piggybacking off of Representative Erickson's comments, where a number of years ago in ESSA, we added a number of competencies for the racial equities and so on. I think it would behoove us to make sure that what we have in ESSA is being acted upon in our schools. And I found, just as a former teacher, that many times things can be mandated from the state level, but for one reason or another are just not being implemented in our schools, mostly because everybody's really busy and it's hard to find the time. So I think, and I agree with adding next steps, I think those are important, and there are some good provisions in this bill. But I think before we add those next steps, we need to make sure the first steps are being taken, because I find we just often just shoot this and shoot that and shoot that and stack things upon each other legislatively, and we find that the first things were never done in the first place. So that's just a comment. My question, and I don't even know quite who to ask this of, so maybe you could help me with that after I ask the question, but it has to do with the component on line 11.13. It's in curriculum policy, and I'll just read it. It says, a school board must adopt a written policy that prohibits discrimination of discipline or discipline for a teacher or principal on the basis of incorporating into curriculum contributions by persons in a federally protected class. We'll go into it further. But my first question is, I don't remember hearing testimony on this in committee. Is this a pervasive problem in our schools that I'm just wondering why this provision is being included in here? Is there a pervasive problem with this happening in our schools to our teachers?
Thank you, Representative Bennett. That was actually in the underlying education policy bill from the governor's office. Maybe either Mr. Adosh or Commissioner Ricker would like to respond.
Sure, Madam Chair. Thank you. This is Mary Catherine. And I can certainly turn it over to Adosh afterwards. But sorry. One of the things I would say is that as our teachers have become more diligent about diversifying their curriculum and teaching to the standards and pursuing ethnic studies and pursuing broader and deeper lessons for their students, that this has come forward more frequently from educators, because they are hearing that it is perhaps not the same as what others have learned, and so in the past. And so this is not just for teachers, but actually then the principals who are working to create an environment of diversifying our curriculum and our education and our schools to make sure that diversification is a protected part of better meeting the needs of our students.
Representative Bennett, did you have a follow-up?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. I almost called you Madam Speaker, so I'll give you a promotion. Just would like to question further, I guess. This does kind of concern me a little bit. Not that we shouldn't make sure that we're including multiple types of curriculum and different types of authors from various backgrounds and so on. I think that is important. But to just blanket say that a teacher cannot be disciplined if it just happens to be a federally protected class that happened to author the curriculum. And I'll give an example. Let's say a math teacher was decided to show a video totally outside of the realm of math, but wanted to kind of get their political point in. And it could be on either side of the aisle that this would happen. And because the curriculum originated from a protected class, that teacher could not be disciplined for that. I just feel like that kind of ties the hands of common sense. So that this provision does concern me a bit. And I also believe that it could even take away from the parent review component, where parents have a right to review curriculum ahead of time, especially if it could be considered controversial. And not all curriculum coming out of protected classes is controversial by any means. But I just think there are issues with this, and this needs to be worked on more before we would include that. I'm sorry, my phone keeps ringing here. So anyway, I'll mute myself.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. I have to give a shout out to my math teacher husband, and there's a great math movie called Stand and Deliver that actually talks about math and the opportunity gap. So sometimes movies can seem like they're out of place, but they're not. I don't know if Commissioner Ricker has anything left to say about this, but I don't know, maybe my nonpartisan staff can help us out on this or someone. I'm looking on lines 11.16, and it does say it has to be consistent with the local collective bargaining agreement. So there is some checks and balances there. But one more response from someone, and then we're going to move on to final comments.
Madam Chair, this is Mary Catherine Ricker again. And I would say, Representative Bennett, thank you so much for bringing up those points that an educator still has a responsibility to teach to the standards that are governed by their license as well. So in this math teacher example, that certainly a math teacher who brings something up that is not teaching to math standards, there are absolutely avenues to make sure that our educators are meeting the needs of our students. And teaching to the Minnesota academic standards as well. And a teacher development and evaluation system is also another avenue of making sure that the choices that a teacher makes fall into their license area as well as fall into how we are improving the way we meet the needs of students. And separating out the review for parents from teacher discipline, that there is nothing about this that would negate a parent's opportunity to review curricular choices.
Thank you, Commissioner. With that, I think seeing no further questions and we want to move on, I'm going to have a representative, unless Representative Erickson, did you have one more follow-up? I still see your hand up.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't know. I maybe should speak after the author, but I just wanted to point out, you know, I don't tell my members how to vote on any of these bills as the minority lead. But, you know, I'm going to be casting a no vote because I just really would like to see some improvements to this bill, like the teaching of character education and citizenship. I think when it comes to discipline, we need to provide a better way for due process for our students. That's going to balance the scale, I think, if we provide that, and that we empower teachers to have, you know, the ability to handle discipline in their classrooms, which I think is, you know, there's something in statute that we put in several years ago, but it's not enough. And since we've been through this distance learning, you know, empowering parents and listening to our parent today testify, you know, we're going to have assessments when this new school year begins. And, you know, we need to provide parents with information. They need to know as the school year begins or as it gets going, you know, what level are their children at after we've experienced this distance learning? You know, and what is their access to different academic areas? And, you know, when we come to staff, you know, I want to see us protecting staff. But I also recall when I first served in the legislature that I taught the first 3 years during the first semester. And I always told my students, I do not talk about politics in my classroom. If you'd like to have that discussion, we do that after class. But that is not a part of my assignment, even though they were very curious because our governor at the time was Jesse Ventura, and they were always so curious. But I told them, you know, we don't do that because my mission is to make you better, and I make you better through the teaching of this class, this course that I'm providing. And also, you know, I'm a little disappointed that the section on our plan for increasing the teachers of color, which is, you know, a great goal to have, the 2% increase. But we also need to offer more opportunities for alternative teacher preparation programs. And one program that's out there is Black Men Teach, which I think would just be a great program for us to build up. Also, Teach for America. And of course, I'm a strong supporter of Grow Your Own, and that's not addressed in this bill either. So, you know, as we proceed, I hope we can make improvements to this, but I just wanted to let you know that I'll be voting no. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. We don't have a funding bill here. We have a policy bill. I know Teach for America is actually, Pelosi has okayed their alternative pathway for licensure, and I think we're up to 10 now, but don't quote me. I'll have to get back to Pelosi. I know there were some that were still on the docket. So Representative Kunesh-Bodine, would you like some closing comments on your bill?
Yes, thank you for this really good discussion on the bill. It certainly isn't everything that we would like it to be, but it's what we can do at this time. But I first want to thank you, Chair Joachim, and the committee members for the really robust hearing focusing on educational issues this session and last session. We really talked about some important discussions and have certainly done the good work to address the educational needs of our Minnesota students. Representative Herr sort of took a lot of the words right out of my mouth, but it's just really important to remember that also our current teaching force in Minnesota is 96% white. Even though our students of color and American Indian students make up 30% of our K-12 population in Minnesota. And they're the majority of our students in our urban, suburban, and rural schools. And then coupled with the fact that Minnesota has one of the nation's largest achievement gaps, we have so much work to be done. And this one is just, you know, one step in that direction. And one point that I do, that is in this bill that I'm really happy to see is the increase of number of teachers, the expectation to increase the number of teachers by 2% each year so that they're not just present in the classroom, but they're thriving in our classroom. So as an educator of over 25 years, you know, I really see the difference it makes firsthand when we have teachers of color in the classroom, armed with common language, with life experiences that are prepared with cultural responsive pedagogy and rigorous preparation that will help them stay in our profession past that three-year drop-off rate. That's really the most heartbreaking part, is that we can get teachers in the classroom and teachers of color in the classroom, but we aren't able to keep them for a number of reasons. But you know, we've worked really hard for over a decade on our Teacher of Color and Indigenous bill, and we have many allies that have spent hundreds of hours on this. And we have worked hard to champion affordable and flexible pathways for prospective teachers of color to choose a career. So, Chair Joachim, while this might be a lot trimmer policy bill than we'd like, it is still one that we can really be proud of. And it isn't the end all. It doesn't have everything in there that we would like. We just don't have the time and we don't have the money right now. But I want to thank you again and our committee members, our hardworking CA and LAs, the House staff and committee members, and members as the Assistant Chair of Ed Policy. I thank you for your support. And I ask you please to vote for support of this House File 36.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Bodine. So members, we are going to go for a vote. So seeing no further questions, Representative Kunesh-Podein moves the motion that House File 36 as amended be recommended to placement on the general register. Are there any questions on the motion? Seeing none, Mr. Peterson, will you please take the roll?
Chair Joachim?
Yes.
Vice Chair Kunesh-Podein?
Yes.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Barr? Representative Baker?
No.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Bierman?
Yes.
Representative Christensen?
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen?
No.
Representative Hassan? Representative Herr?
Yes.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Mariani? Representative Moeller?
Yes.
Representative Sandel? Representative Sandel?
Yes.
Representative Scott excused. Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wozniak?
Yes.
Madam Chair, there are 9 ayes and 10 nays, or in 5 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. There being 9 yeas and 5 nays, the motion prevails. House File 36, as amended, is recommended for placement on the general register. So now I'm going to pass the virtual gavel over to Committee Vice Chair Representative Kunesh-Podein, while I quickly present House File 33.
All right, here we go. Members, now we're going to be taking up House File 33. The language is identical to what was passed off of the House floor in the second engrossment of House File 163 during the regular session. We, of course, have taken extensive testimony on all of these provisions in the past and are ready to put the bill in front of you. So, Representative Joachim, would you like to move your bill before the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move House File 33 before the committee with a recommendation to place it on the general register.
House File 33, as amended, is before the committee. Representative Joachim, would you please proceed with the presentation?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's actually not amended, so we note that House File 33 is before the committee. And quick presentation, and thank you, Madam Chair. Like you said before, House File 33 contains language in, that was in House File 163 as it left the House floor during the last night of regular session. We all know that the pandemic has cut our work short this session, and that is why you see the slimmed down version before us of an education policy bill. I'm happy that we've had the special session to do a little bit more work in House File 36, but that too is just a start. The pandemic has shown a harsh light on our opportunity gap, and I fear it's exacerbated it. Next year, we will have to have a laser focus on policies that help our students who will be facing increased challenges and may have fallen even further behind during the spring distance learning. So once again, House File 33, we provide some flexibility for students in our special education programs by including House File 1940 of Representative Hewitts and House File 853 of Representative Torkelson. Both of these provisions were left over from last session's bill that passed off the House floor. Also from last year's bill, Representative Hewitt's House File 575 that allows school nurses to dispose of unused medication at the end of the year. We also have Representative Edelson's House File 3852, which is affixed to the required dyslexia screening reports that passed in a bill last session. We also have Representative Mueller's provision, House File 4257, that will require Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers to receive mental health training similar to the current training our Tier 3 and 4 teachers receive. Also included is Representative Edelson's House File 3166 that provides their students vaping prevention instruction. And with Representative Sandel's House File 3179, we make a technical fix to school district's transportation contracts. And then another important provision makes sure that voters are notified about school referendums 45 days before election in Representative Freiburg's House File 3179 instead of the 30 days before that is in current law. Finally, there are a few early childhood provisions that were heard in the Early Childhood Committee. Annie Marsh from Nonpartisan Staff will briefly go over those provisions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Annie Mock with House Research. So I'm going to briefly go through those provisions in Article 5 of House File 33. So starting on page 13, line 16, Section 1 provides that public schools may request documentation for a student's age and identifies the different types of documentation that may be requested. Section 2 begins on page 13, line 26. And this is language that is identical to the language in Article 6 of House File 36 relating to school districts and charter schools being prohibited from dismissing children in preschool or pre-kindergarten programs and having them use non-exclusionary discipline procedures. Sections 3 and 4 of House File 33 both amend the Early Learning Scholarships Program. Section 3 starts on page 14, line 12, and this provides an alternative deadline for meeting a development screening requirement for scholarship recipients who are under the age of 3. Section 4, starting on page 15, line 21, extends the deadline by which child care programs have to have a 3 or 4-star parent aware rating in order to accept early learning scholarships. Under current law, that deadline is July 1st, 2020. And this would extend it to July 1st, 2024. And there's also some obsolete language that is deleted. And then Section 5, which begins on page 16, line 1, this adds tribal health and human service agencies to the interagency early intervention committees. And that is Article 5.
Thank you, Ms. Mock. So members, that's the bill. And in conjunction to House File 36 and House File 18, I think we have a pretty good package for our students, but we still will have more work to do in next session, of course. So members, I stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. So members, are there any questions on House File 33? I'm going to look and see if I see any hands up. Okay, Representative Erickson, you have a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair Kunesh-Podein. You know, we don't know if this might be our last chance with a policy bill, and you heard our amendments on the House floor at the 11th hour of that last night. So, you know, my no vote is going to represent the fact that this bill could be improved as we think about what has happened in the last quarter, actually, of a school year to our students. And the fact that, you know, continuity of learning is not included in this policy bill. We need more flexibility in education programming. You know, one thing that I think we have to be concerned about is the commissioner's announcement that nothing will be decided until the end of July as far as the next school year. And that's real uncertainty. And I know, Representative Joachim, you're planning some information meetings. But to me, as a former policy chair, I'd be really concerned about including policy from what we've just experienced with our school year and its closure and the fact that there was distance learning going on. And I just so fear that we have left so many students behind. And that just breaks my heart. In fact, when Dr. Rodriguez spoke about relationships, I have talked to so many children who are so sad because they have not been able to be with their friends. They've not even played together. So, I mean, we have work that we should have considered in this proposal, especially because it could be our last chance. And finally, a statement about parent aware. I don't know why we're doing what we're doing in this bill to parent aware. You know, the reading requirement should be restored or we should simply repeal. But I just don't think we're going to gain anything with that. So with that said, Madam Chair Kunesh-Podein and Chair Joachim, I'm going to cast a no vote, but with hopes that maybe we can improve this bill. Thank you.
Representative Erickson, I would love to have more discussion on improving the bill, but it would be better best left for either probably House File 36. House File 33 is set and is not going to be opened again. Is our agreement with the other body, but I would more than be happy to, after we have our discussion next week, to look at some stuff that we could bring forward into either House File 36 if we don't hear it right away, or I am sure that we're going to end up having another small special session as well. I hear some of the same concerns that you have around what our students are feeling. That's why it is so important that we're looking at House File 36 right now. I can't help but think if we would have had some of those provisions in place after last year, how much distance learning may have looked different for our kids with a focus on our students. I know our districts are also facing a lot of uncertainty, and that's why I want to make sure that we have those conversations next week and thorough conversations in public where everyone can hear them. I've been having them with Representative Dabney across the state. I've also been, sorry to the commissioner, very aggressive about pulling our chair to the table in those discussions. So our work's not done here yet. We will have more work to do, and I think it's important that the legislature does do their work. That's why House File 33 is leftover business that we should accomplish. House File 36 is things that we probably should have done last year or done the year before that we should look forward to. And I know we're going to have a very robust discussion next week as well. So with that, members, I would ask for your support of House File 33.
Representative Joachim, thank you so much. Well, I'm not seeing any more questions. Representative Joachim renews the motion that House File 33 be recommended for placement on the general register. Any questions on the motion? All right, seeing none, the clerk will take the roll on the motion, please.
Chair Joachim?
Yes.
Vice Chair Kunesh-Podein?
Yes.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Barr? Representative Baker?
No.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Bierman?
Yes.
Representative Christensen?
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen?
No.
Representative Hassan? Representative Herr?
Yes.
Representative Jordan?
Yes.
Representative Mariani? Representative Moeller?
Yes.
Representative Sandel?
Yes.
Representative Scott is excused. Representative Erdahl? Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Yes.
Chair Kunesh-Podein, there are 10 ayes and 4 nays.
Thank you. So there being 10 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails and House File 33 is recommended for the placement on the general register. And with that, I will pass the virtual gavel back to Chair Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein. Last on the agenda today is House File 18 of Representative Juergens. The committee has heard this in the past, and the contents of this bill on the floor during regular session in both House File 55 and 163. We took extensive testimony in the bill, so today we'll just be hearing from Representative Juergens. Members, I have one quick announcement that I'll make before we go on, because we have the room until 4:15. So as Representative Erickson alluded to, I've been working towards putting some informational meetings together after I've talked to folks across the state. And those informational meetings will be taking place next week. I don't have the exact time, but I do know they're more than likely to be Wednesday and Thursday morning next week. We'll get you the times, and then the following Tuesday. Of course, they'll also be recorded, and I think they'll be very, very, very beneficial for folks to hear. We'll be gathering input from everyone from parents to teachers to social workers to school counselors to school nurses to school board members, principals, administrators, our ethnic councils, and much, much more. So we will be talking about that with a focus on what summer school is looking like, their opportunities and challenges they face with distance learning, and with their eyes on to the fall school year. So with that, Representative Juergens, we have House File 18 before us. Representative Sorry, my brain just stopped. Representative Jordan, would you like to move House File 18 before the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move House File 18.
Representative Jorgen moves House File 18 before the committee and as recommended to be placed on the general registry. Representative Jorgens, would you like to present your bill, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Jordan, for moving House File 18. We don't need to go into great detail about this bill. We've been here before, too many times before, in fact. I've been working on lunch shaming since 2017 when I heard about students in Stewartville that had their lunches dumped in the garbage because they had a negative balance in their lunch account. Then in Richfield back in November, 40 students had their lunches taken off their trays and thrown in the trash. Every time we hear of lunches dumped in the garbage, we hear that these are isolated instances, but every time lunch dumping is reported in the news, news organizations contact me, and the coverage results in phone calls and emails that I receive from all over the state, parents and grandparents telling me their story or their children's story of similar experiences. So this is more widespread in the state of Minnesota than any of us would like to admit, and more widespread than any of us should tolerate, and it's clear that existing statute isn't sufficient. So here's what House File 18 does. It would require schools to adopt and post their school meal policy. The policy must maintain the dignity of students by prohibiting lunch shaming or otherwise ostracizing a student. Any reminders for outstanding debt must not intentionally demean, stigmatize, or humiliate the child. A school cannot limit a student's participation in school activities, graduation ceremonies, or other extracurricular activities due to unpaid meal debt. If the school uses a collection agency to collect unpaid school meal debt, that must be disclosed in the policy. All communication relating to school meal debt must be delivered only to a parent or a guardian. This is an important feature. Once a meal has been placed on a tray or served, it may not be withdrawn from the student because of an outstanding meal debt. If a student is eligible for free or reduced price lunch, they will be served that meal even if they have an outstanding debt. School districts deserve to get paid for their lunches that they serve, but that is something that needs to be worked out between the adults, between the school and the parents, not the kids. Like I heard my friend Representative Hamilton say, let the kids be kids. Stopping the practice of dumping a child's lunch in the garbage is the right thing to do. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jorgens. Members, are there any questions on House File 18? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Jorgens, for bringing this forward. When I think about it, we could have had this done with back on the last day of regular session. So I appreciate your tenacity. It's important that our children know that they can receive a lunch and not be under the subject of discipline or, as we call it, shaming. I know children who have gone through this experience, and it's very sad when you think about the fact that their lunch tray was yanked away from them because there was no money in the fund that their parents or someone was supposed to pay into. So thank you again, Representative Jorgens.
Thank you, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. It's my hope, and maybe we can continue to work on this, is that we actually just feed kids. That's a novel idea, too. So I see no further questions. Just one more round there. Nope, no further questions. So members, Representative Jordan renews her motion that House File 18 be recommended for placement on the general register. Mr. Peterson, you go ahead and take the roll.
Chair Youakim?
Yes.
Vice Chair Kunesh-Podein?
Yes.
Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Representative Barr? Representative Baker?
Yes.
Representative Bennett?
Yes.
Representative Bierman?
Yes.
Representative Christensen?
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yes.
Representative Hassan. Representative Hur.
Yes.
Representative Jordan.
Yes.
Representative Mariani. Representative Moeller.
Yes.
Representative Sandel.
Yes.
Representative Scott is excused. Representative Erdahl. Representative Erdahl.
Yes.
Representative Wasowick.
Yes.
There are 14 ayes and zero nays.
Members, there being 14 ayes and zero nays, House File 18 passes and is recommended to move to the General Registry. I actually have nonpartisan staff. Tim Strom has a suggestion. When House File 36 was introduced, it was not noted correctly in the title. So he has a motion for us to consider. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, this is Tim Strom from House Research. Perhaps the easiest way would just be to instruct the riser to amend the title accordingly, and the reviser's office could add a few additional words. As House File 36 reads now, it just says relating to education, and usually the title would mention more of the subject of what's in the bill. The reviser's office can do that with just a simple instruction from the committee. And if you're more comfortable voting on that instruction, that's fine. But as part of the committee report, Mr. Peterson's committee report can reflect that the instruction was there for the reviser to adjust the title.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Members, do you have problems with us just giving instruction, or would you prefer to vote on it? Representative Erickson, what do you think?
Madam Chair and committee members, I think this is a technical change, and I appreciate Mr. Strom bringing it up. It needs to be changed, but no, this is a technical change and we shouldn't have to vote on it.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. So members, I'll make note for the record that we give permission to the nonpartisan staff and the revisor's office to amend the title accordingly for House File 36. Mr. Strom, does that do it?
Madam Chair, yes.
Thank you, members, and thank you for your patience today. I think we did some very good work. I'm glad we got a chance to have a do-over. And as I said, look for the announcements for the exact times for those listening sessions next week. And with that, members, we are adjourned.